This is the Shoot Once Podcast. I'm Frank Walker. Welcome back to the Shoot Once Podcast, everybody. Part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Do appreciate you joining us for the show again this... I'm trying to get over saying this week, since we do two shows a week at this point. Again, for those of you who are still new to the party, or maybe listened to the Shoot Once Podcast before and haven't been on board since we switched over to the Hockey Podcast Network, how this goes is, with the Hockey Podcast Network, I will have new shows drop on Mondays and Thursdays. So if you subscribe to the Hockey Podcast Network, you will get the full network of shows, amazing shows for all around the NHL. So I would, you know, highly recommend jumping into that. If you are still saying, I'm sticking by this one for now, the show still comes out on its own individual feed that it always did a day later. So instead of seeing the shows or listening to the shows on Monday and Thursday, you'll be getting them on Tuesday and Friday. So a little different there. The nice thing is with the hockey season, and especially the way we talk about it, it's not game to game as much. You might notice a little bit of a difference in shows. If the Jackets somehow were to make the playoffs, there might be a weird delay for you in how content comes down. But for the most part, I think everyone should be able to still enjoy the shows. I would, again, highly recommend jumping into the Hockey Podcast Network of stuff. It's a good thing to be able to get that sense from around the league. Or the thing that I tend to do a little more often on it is I listen a little more heavily to the other shows in the Metro, because I always want to know more about what's in our division, who we're up against, all that sort of stuff. So jumping into the show this week, we're going to start like we always do by looking at Dom's projections on daily projections from The Athletic, just to kind of give us a sense of where everything is. Because right now, we're so early in the season that if you just look at the NHL standings, and even later in the season, the NHL standings, it's hard for them to get great until you're into the final few weeks. And the reason is, when you're looking at them, it's a mix of, I mean, either teams haven't played as many games as other teams, or, you know, maybe they've played certain teams in the division more, or there's, you know, it's a weird cornucopia, a weird little mix of where the teams are at this point in the season. So, I mean, looking over the standings, the Blue Jackets are, what are they, fifth or sixth or something? They're seventh in the division, but spots 2, 4 through 7 all have 2 points. The third spot with the Rangers is at 4 points, but then again, they've only played 2 games, so they're 2-0, which is good. But then, you know, number two spot, the Washington Capitals, who played 4 games, have only got 6 points. So theoretically, I mean, almost everybody could jump to within a point of second with a win, who's in 4 through 7 there. We're early enough in the season that things don't matter as much. Obviously wins, the 2 points still count as much. But as Blue Jackets fans saw going into this week, early season narratives tend to take over a lot. Now, by Dom Lashushin's projections, he's got the Blue Jackets up to a 35% chance of making the playoffs. So I think we're up a little bit there. Projecting them to go 40, 33, and 10, which... I mean, you know, he's projecting them to have a points of 89, which doesn't match up with 40, 33, and 10. That would be 90 points. But when you do averages and you're doing so many projections, it's tough to tell how that's going to go. But it's the kind of thing where the team's just kind of holding their own. We'll see what they do. Now, when I'm talking early here about you know, not getting wrapped up in things as the season starts, I was listening to a podcast earlier, and they were talking about, oh, you know, these are the teams that are 4-0, and these are the teams that haven't won yet, and who are you worried about, and what's the problems here, and all that. Let's all take a breath at this point, because something that happens a lot in sports, and hockey is susceptible to it because of the length of the season, and especially the beginning and ends of seasons, people are... are trapped into this idea of, oh, there's some narrative here. There's a reason. If this team's 4-0 all of a sudden, they did the right things in the offseason and they're working harder and all this. And that may or may not be true. It also may just be, okay, things have fallen their way. I don't remember if it was this year or last year or the year before, but there was a season where the Vancouver Canucks had gone, were 4-0 to start the season. And the mind-blowing part of it was they had not led in any of those games until they won them. Their first four games were all overtime games where they had either been tied or trailing the whole game until they tied it to send it to overtime, and then they scored in overtime. So they were 3-4-0 and had never led, and then had a terrible season. I mean, it was just, these are the little things that we don't really know. Like, I was hearing people talk and they were like, oh, you can tell James Neal put in the work this offseason. I don't know if James Neal worked harder necessarily this offseason than he did the previous offseason, but his shooting percentage is something like 42. For those of you who don't know, James Neal, he's a winger for the Oilers, scored four goals in a game the other night. These are the kind of things that people see, and because it's early in the season, we ascribe a story to it. That may or may not be true. I doubt that James Neal went above and beyond in a way this offseason that was unheard of to him prior to this, to before now. He probably put in the work, and guess what? Now they went in this time. I mean, it's we tend to do that. And as Blue Jackets fans, we're all very aware of that. Because for a lot of people, the 0-2 start was the reason to jump off a bridge. Or the reason to say, this team... I think the most patently ridiculous thing I saw was the guy on Facebook who kept saying, oh, this team's winning 13 games this season. They're not winning 13 games. You have to be bad to win 13 games in the NHL. I mean, you have to be so far below your competition that it's not even... Like, you have to be so unprepared as a franchise that to win 13 games would just be difficult. I mean, looking at last year's schedule, 2018-19, what was it? Worst team in the league, the Ottawa Senators. So the Senators were the worst team in the league. They had 64 points. They were 7 points behind the next team, Los Angeles. They'd won 29 games. To win 13 games, you have to be historically bad. So that's not happening. See, that's the thing. We're getting into this, oh, we're all the way over here. Now, I think some fans, after the win, I'm glad to see there aren't a lot of fans overreacting to this one, going the other direction. We just have to understand that things are, this team is it may be okay. So in the game against the Buffalo Sabres, looking at the 5-on-5 stats provided by our good friends over at Natural Stat Trick, in 5-on-5 play, the Blue Jackets, their Corsi 4 percentage was 53.93. So they had a nice little edge in possession when counted by that metric here. What we look at a lot on our side is scoring chances for and against. They had 22 scoring chances for, 13 against, for a 62.86% scoring chance for rate. High danger chances for their high danger chances for them was 4 against 5. Not great, but when you carry the scoring chances for by almost by that 22-13 margin, having that high danger chances for not be as good for you is not too big a deal. It was a good game to see the Blue Jackets bounce back in. I was very happy to see it because it was... What you didn't want to see is you didn't want to see things start to roll. You wanted to get a win because the thing that you didn't want is you didn't want a bunch of guys in the locker room starting to become worried about getting that first win. Because I think that's the kind of stress that can wear on a team and make things harder for them. So I was happy to see that being avoided. Happy to see that turn out the way it did there. Korpisalo had a better night. Some of the bigger players have started to come out a little bit more. We've got Tessier had that game-winning goal, which was really fun to see him get his game winner. Seeing Cam score again on the power play. The power play starting to look good. What were they, 66% chance the other night or something, which obviously that's not going to maintain. But it was good to see them on the right side of things. It was good to see those players on the right side of where they needed to be. So I was very happy to see that. I mean, the Blue Jackets this week, we've got more tests. We've got Carolina and the Ducks. And it's just, there's just more that's going to be happening. So I'm still very much a, okay, we'll see where this season goes kind of thing. Which is fine. That's where this kind of season is going to be for quite a while. As far as where we're going. So what I wanted to touch on a little bit more this week is some more big picture stuff. And mainly because some interesting information has come out this last week or so that I wanted to comment on, that I thought was interesting. This whole thing started up in my side by a tweet from Jeff Sobota. It was at Jackets Insider. And it was two CBJ notes from the NHL. Blue Jackets had 16 drafted players on opening night roster. Two more than the next closest club, Philadelphia 14. So the Blue Jackets had 16 players on their roster that they had actually drafted, which is pretty impressive when you think about it. And then Columbus entered 2019-20 with the youngest opening night roster by average age, 25.7 years, edging Carolina 25.8, New York Rangers 25.9. Now, I'm not exactly sure how they count this because James Myrtle, he did his methodology on it. You can see it on The Athletic if you have that subscription. But he has a methodology where he kind of released a thing that was the average age, average height, average weight, I mean, average draft position of a player on the team, that sort of thing. So nationality, so just a lot of different stuff. The two things that I find interesting on this list for the Blue Jackets. By his percentages, the Blue Jackets, he has listed as the second youngest team at 25.8 years. So it's the same. It's slightly off than what the numbers Dubota had from the NHL at 25.7. But again, we're talking about second instead of first. We're talking a matter. When you're into points of years, we're talking a matter of a week or two. I mean, it's not that big a deal. But the reason I find this important, the Blue Jackets have been one of the younger teams in the NHL for a very long time. And it's where it's interesting is you do see it in how this team is constructed. First of all, you see it in the fact that the Blue Jackets have more cap space than any other team in the NHL currently. At least when you're not counting in LTIRs and whatnot. But you also see it when you're, you know, going up and down the roster. I mean, obviously Cam Atkinson, but that's the thing. Cam Atkinson is one of the best players on your team. He's 30. And he's one of the more experienced players on your team. He's 30. He's not in his mid-30s or anything. Your goalies are both 25. Your defense core, the old man of the defense core is David Savard at 28. And I mean, it's ridiculous. Seth Jones is 25. Zach Werenski is 22. And the interesting thing, too, is a lot of these young guys are playing pretty high-end positions for the team. Pierre-Luc Dubois is the first-line center. Alexander Tessier is your second-line left wing. We kind of lose track of the fact, guys, that Alexander Wennberg's 25, that he's still a young player. He's every bit as young as Seth Jones. Oliver Bjorkstrand's on your right wing. Until Josh Anderson comes back, which let that be soon, and Emil Bennstrom's the right wing third liner. But even then, if we're talking about Josh Anderson is only 25. I mean, that's the thing. This team is really built around a lot of young players. On the defensive core, Werenski, Jones, Murray, Vladislav Garakov, Marcus Nudavara, all of these guys are super young. It is a very young team. Now, I've already seen some people clap back with things like, oh, well, we're a young team. Every year, everyone says, oh, you're a young team. Wait till next year and you'll be good. But this team's been to the playoffs for three straight years, guys. And I get it. Yes, we don't have Bob anymore. We don't have Panarin anymore. But this team made the playoffs when it didn't have Panarin. Yes, the Bob question's still going to be hanging out there as far as goaltending goes. But it is a... It's a testament to how this team is being built, what we're seeing here. Something I wanted to touch on as well, and because it ties in, Pierre LeBrun did an interview with Doug Armstrong. And I'm going to read one of his questions here and the answer to it, because I think it's instructive in a way of thinking here. Talking to him about the trade the Blues did for Justin Falk. It was a predictable reaction in many ways that once you made the Falk deal, plus signed him to an extension, people were trying to read into it what it meant for your captain, which I think is a natural question. You've made it clear you want to keep Alex Pietrangelo, who's an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, around. How do you think it's all going to fit as far as tackling that? Now, this is a very interesting answer. I don't want to get into specifics as far as Alex himself. Our goal is to have a lot of good players. Our organization has been built not on the back of one or two guys, but the collective whole. We believe we have depth up front and depth on the back end. We have a lot of wealthy players, but maybe no really rich players. And that's the way we believe we can stay competitive in this market. I look at a team that I view that has been good for a number of years in Boston. They have their top players that have bought into an organizational outlook, and quite honestly, we have too. Unless you're picking at number one or number two, you're getting a McDavid or a Crosby or a Ovechkin or a Matthews, it's difficult to find. You can create in your own mind an $11 million player or a $12 million player, but that might not be it. Some of it's marketing, some of it is real. I just believe that our method of death by 1,000 cuts is the way you build a team if you don't have that type of superstar player. Now, two people who are saying, well, who still may not be getting what it is the Blue Jackets are doing. Remember that John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen, where they were before they came to Columbus, they were in St. Louis. Then they come here. And I think what you saw, and I think part of the reason the front office was a little bit extra miffed when Panarin turned it down is, I think the front office saw an opportunity that they have a team that's being built kind of like the St. Louis Blues, where it is death by 1,000 cuts. It's to have a bunch of really, really good players, and maybe not that superstar, but they saw a chance that they might be able to hang on to a superstar who is going to be in his prime for a long time while also being able to keep other guys around. And that didn't happen. And when that didn't happen, I think that's where part of the issue was. But at the same time, I think the reason this team can still be successful going forward is they are being built as a death by 1,000 cuts kind of team. This week, there was a lot of fans online who were kind of celebrating because Bobrovsky got just shelled in one of his games. He gave up 4 goals on when it was something silly, like 15 shots or something. It wasn't a great night. Some people took this as, oh, yeah, but yeah, glad we didn't pay for that, that sort of thing. That's not the point of what you get when you pay a lot for a goaltender. Goaltending is a really volatile position. There are nights where you will have a goaltender who will stand on his head. Nothing will get past him. That other team will shoot the puck 50 times, and you won't be able to get a thing past him. It won't matter what you do. And then there are nights where that exact same goaltender can't stop a beach ball. And it's just, there's nothing they can do. That's it. They are just not stopping anything that night. The funny thing is, what you're looking for is how to get somebody who is reliable without a lot of money involved. Because, I mean, the teams that are winning Stanley Cups, they're not doing it with $10 million goalies. They're just not. They're doing it with goalies that are playing well, playing okay, and then a team around them where that whole team is always good. Because the thing about hockey is it's all about making your best chances. It's all a chance game. And here's the thing. So let's talk about a team like the Edmonton Oilers for a second. The Edmonton Oilers have the best player in the game in Connor McDavid. When Connor McDavid is on the ice, Edmonton's chances of scoring a goal are much better than yours. I don't care what team you are in this league, Edmonton is more likely to score if Connor McDavid is on the ice. Here's the problem Edmonton has had over the last few years. Connor McDavid, at the most, is on the ice for about a third of the game. And then for the other two-thirds of the game, because the rest of Edmonton was not a deep team, your team had a better chance of scoring a goal than Edmonton. And that's for just about every team in the league. So Edmonton has not been a great team the last few years. The way the Blue Jackets are built, the way the Blues were built for last year, and the way the Blue Jackets are trying to build, is that, okay, it's not going to be that every time we put out a line, we're always going to have a better chance of scoring a view. But it's that the difference in those chances, the margins on those chances are as small as they can be for when you have it. And we're trying to build that, okay, on that top line, yeah, you got a little bit better chance than scoring than we do. But as we start getting into lines 2 and 3 and 4, we've on multiple lines, we have a better chance of scoring than you. So that as we play shift after shift, however many shifts you play in a hockey game, however many dozens and dozens of shifts you play, after 82 games in a season, that when all those odds come together, we will put more goals on the board than our opponents. That's the idea here. And that's this plan. That's what you're seeing with them. It's interesting. It's looking for value where some people don't always see it. Because the thing is, in recent years, there's been this idea that, and I've heard in different places, that what Toronto has done is how you want to rebuild a franchise. Tear it to the ground, get a superstar, put okay pieces around that superstar, but always keep him young so that you can, you know, always stay solid and always, you know, so when the superstar's not on the ice, you still have a good chance. Well, Toronto's been good because they have some superstars, and then they've had Frederik Andersen, who's played really well over the course of a long period of time. But Toronto still hasn't gotten out of the first round of the playoffs. Whereas the teams that are winning cups at this point, in the last 2 years, we're looking at St. Louis and Washington. And the teams that they're beating in the finals, Boston and the Golden Knights, they're rolling up to you. Now, in the case of Boston and Washington and the Golden Knights, they'll have big name goaltenders. But these guys weren't playing. These weren't the years any of these players won Vezinas that they'd won the cup. They played okay. They played really well, but they weren't the best goalie in the league. And they weren't paid $10 million. They just were able to roll line after line and try and beat you. Now, the playoffs is a little bit of a different animal. We've talked about that because it's a short sample size. If the Oilers could happen get to the playoffs, maybe then just having that Connor McDavid edge on a third of the game can win it. But you get my point here. My point on this being that the mindset, what I'm trying to do is trying to put Blue Jackets fans in the mindset of where I think management's at on this. And that quote from Doug Armstrong, I think, is the closest thing we've heard is, "I just believe that our method of death by a thousand cuts is the way that you build a team if you don't have that type of superstar player." And the Blue Jackets don't have that type of player. Closest thing I think we honestly have to a superstar right now is either Seth Jones or Cam Atkinson. Seth Jones might actually be like that like Norris Trophy level defenseman, but he's not McDavid, Crosby, Ovechkin, Matthews. He's not a first line center who's going to score 40 goals a year or something. But I think this week was, I mean, it was good for the Blue Jackets. I mean, we'll see where the rest of the week goes from here. But I think this was instructive in how we see the team and what's going forward. One other thing I want to touch on. So something we talk about a lot on this show is media and how we interact with hockey. And in America, the national provider of hockey is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. And most fans who watch, when you watch NBC, you're watching NBCSN. And later in the year, they start putting some games on broadcast television. And to say that hockey fans are disappointed with how NBC treats the NHL is probably a bit of an understatement. And there's two things that NBC did this week that I want to talk about. One is being universally decried as terrible, which I'd have to agree with. One is so far from what I've seen the early returns where people don't like it, but I think is a step in the right direction. The thing nobody likes, so far it seems, is that NBC is starting their own podcasts about hockey, which from what I've heard so far is pretty much some of their same studio analysts talking to each other, and then maybe they bring in a guest. It's pretty much their show that they do, like, in their intermissions or their pregame shows, a little more relaxed. It doesn't feel like a priority, and it doesn't feel different. It doesn't feel made for the format. It's not great, is where I'll go with it. It's just, eh. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, throwing on a podcast is an okay idea, but you're the national broadcasting partner of the NHL, and this is your chance to be like, oh, this is what we want to do. Yay. It just, I want them to focus on the right things. Now, this is where I and what is now becoming conventional internet wisdom have a disagreement. Tonight for Wednesday Night Hockey, the NHL brought out, or NBC might have done it, but they had the band Green Day, who's, fair enough, their most popular days are behind them, do this song that they made specifically for Wednesday Night Hockey. Because if you know before, they did the Wednesday Night Rivalry thing, which was tricky to keep up because, you know, but although it did give us the great rivalry that is the Buffalo Sabres and the Columbus Blue Jackets, but it's hard to keep up because you run into that. You run into, well, we're going to put every team on once, and maybe the rivalries don't always hit on Wednesdays and all that. So I think the idea of Wednesday Night Hockey and trying to do more of the premier thing is a good idea. But, so they make this anthem song and they play it, and there's, you know, some different things of players, and then they've got some, like, close-ups of players there. You can tell they were filming them, and one of them's like, they're playing air guitar with the hockey sticks or pretending like they're singing lyrics or something. It's silly. It's ridiculous. The song's not a great song in and of itself. It's okay. It's not great. But man, are people killing it. Man, it's just, people are just hating on it. But I think the intention in this time is good. Because if you think about how NBC presents their biggest property in sports, Sunday Night Football, what do they have? They have Carrie Underwood singing a song where NFL players just kind of play these bit parts while they show highlights, and she's singing a song that really isn't that good about football. But it's a step in the right direction, because what you're trying to do, if you're a hockey fan in America, what you want, and what we haven't had probably since hockey left ESPN, is a feeling that hockey is being treated as an event. I think the only time we get close, and I think the only reason there's still decent ratings for things like the Winter Classic, is that it's still kind of treated like an event. And I think hockey fans want that. I think they want their sport to be treated that way, because Sunday Night Football sure is. My goodness, is it treated like an event. There's not that much other things in sports that are really treated that way in America anymore. Like the Olympics are treated that way. Sunday Night Football, certain college football games, like things like ESPN does their game day where they actually go to college campuses before the day, you know, on the day of the game. And it kind of creates that event atmosphere. And an idea I've pushed on a show for a while that I really think NBC ought to do, and the reason I say that the Green Day song is a step in the right direction, is I think they need to take that step further. And the way they have their football night in America on Sunday nights, once college football is over, so you're not constantly going up the behemoth that is that, I think NBC should roll out a Saturday or a hockey night in America. The same way they got it in Canada. I mean, not exactly, because you won't have the same people. See, you won't have any attention. People watching, you know, them talking about hockey team or Canadian teams for an hour and a half. But you roll the same kind of thing out where you've got a pregame show. You try and do it in a really cool studio. You know, you always focus really on the big game in the country that night. You don't always, I mean, it's the kind of thing where you would want to almost want to say, okay, what is the game that's the best two teams right now? And not focus on the stat, not focus on the cities these teams play in, where you're really trying to get hockey to transcend that regional relevance that it has. Because if you're a hockey fan in America, you notice that NBC has a lot of Philadelphia Flyers, Pittsburgh Penguins, Boston Bruins, Buffalo Sabres. There's certain teams that are on all the time. Now, they started doing better with that. They started trying to get the Canadian stars in more. I think Vegas is at another line because I think they know Vegas is a big market. They like pushing Vegas. But it would be a refreshing thing for there to be on broadcast television a big game each week that had two, you know, that you tried to get the best Saturday night game of the week on every night or every week. So that to say, as much as people are dreading the song, and I honestly don't know the quality of that song. I'm not that big a music fan. It seemed okay to me, but it seemed like a very forgettable song. It was okay. I don't even remember much of anything about it. But I would like to see, I think it's a step in the right direction because it's treating hockey more like an event, which I am happy about. So anyway, folks, Jackets play again on Friday, so we got a bit of a wait again. Then they play Saturday, and it's, again, this October schedule is just funky. Yeah, they play Anaheim on Friday. They go to Carolina on Saturday. The next Wednesday, they get Dallas. So, and then they have another back-to-back the next weekend. It's a real weird opening to the season, so we'll see how it goes. But I thank you all for listening tonight. Again, subscribe if you haven't subscribed, review if you haven't reviewed, for my feed, for the Hockey Podcast Network, for all that good stuff. Thank you very much. Have a good day, and go Jackets. This has been the Shoot Once Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @ShootOncePod.